Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. It's been a great while since USA Network launched an original drama on Sunday nights. That while ends this Sunday with Eyewitness, an unusual point of view crime story. Creative executive producer Ardini Hatak joins me next. We started the week checking out Graves, one half of Epic's opening pair of Sunday Night Originals, and in our next half hour, we'll head into Berlin Station, an on-the-moment spy saga, assisted by creative executive producer Owen Steinhauer and executive producer Bradford Winters. NBC turned from cartoons to live action last Saturday morning. A highlight of their three-hour More to Know block is Give, where celebrities spotlight enterprises that make a difference for others. We'll know more about this series with executive producer Gary Reeves next hour from San Francisco. Also ahead, Scream continues on MTV. Prepare for a TV bonfire. The answer to this week's classic trivia question and an extremely special guest announcement. Hey everyone, I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. Happy with us on this Friday afternoon. 59 degrees at the top of the hour here in New York. And welcome to a 90-minute edition of the program All About Television. Third of three episodes this week. We got a great one for you, and we invite you to be part of the program. If you have a question or comment for any of our guests over the course of the show, give us a ring. And here's the number you use, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the world, here on Blog Talk Radio. We got a chat room going, and some people have entered already. It's Simon Apple 04 by name. You'll find it on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And we've got guests 559 and 580 already in the room. So use the phone or the room. Either way, you get involved. And while the phone is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen, follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. Ardini Hatak from Eyewitness joins us live from Los Angeles after these news notes. Current broadcast sitcom kingpin Chuck Lorre could have two non-broadcast projects in play by this time next year. The Big Bang Theory creator already has Disjointed in the works for Netflix. That's the pop comedy starring Kathy Bates. But now The Hollywood Reporter learns, along with Variety, that Lorre is shaping up an 8-episode adaptation of Bonfire of the Vanities, the acclaimed 1987 Tom Wolfe novel, which became a widely blasted film 3 years later with Tom Hanks in the lead. Warner Brothers, involved with Lorre's comedy series, would join in the making of Bonfire, the miniseries. No official confirmation yet from Lorre, Amazon, or Warner Brothers. However, writer-executive producer Margaret Nagel acknowledged early this afternoon that Bonfire is on track at Amazon with her board as the writer. In a Facebook posting, Nagel said Bonfire is, and I quote, a massive book that deserves a strong narrative platform on which to tell the story. It's very much about how, when a society values some lives more than others, a civilization can topple, unquote. At Amazon at the moment, today marks the release of their latest original series, Goliath. This courtroom drama co-stars Billy Bob Thornton, William Hurt, and Maria Bello, and marks the TV return of writer-producer David Kelley, whose credits include L.A. Law, The Practice, and Boston Legal. The TV version of Scream will get a third season on MTV. However, this season ahead will only run 6 episodes instead of 10 the first year and 12 this year. And one more time, Scream will move forward with different overseers, following the exit of producers Michael Gans and Richard Register. MTV will play a 2-hour Halloween-themed episode next Tuesday night. And that's news notes for today. All week long, we've been showcasing programs that appear this Sunday night for the first time on various networks. On Monday, we brought you Graves with its creator, Josh Michael Stern. Yeah, on Tuesday, we brought you an exclusive interview with Rod Lurie, director of Killing Reagan, the international graphic child movie adapted from the Bill O'Reilly book that will be on Sunday night. And now we come to not one, but two more series that are also debuting on Sunday. The first one is one that USA Network has been looking at for a long time and has not had a Sunday night series that's original for a long time. But this Sunday night, they will. A series called Eyewitness. It's adapted from overseas format where the crime is committed and is shown from the perspective of the people who witness it. Joining us live is the creator and adapter of the series for U.S. television. He also is the creator and executive producer of Shades of Blue, the Jennifer Lopez series produced here in New York, which goes into its second season next year on NBC. It's a pleasure to welcome this program, Ardini Hatak. Ardini, welcome in.
Thank you very much.
What about Eyewitness? What made you interested? What motivated you to adapt this format?
I do a lot of business international, more with my formats. And I met a distribution company in the UK called DRG. Became extremely friendly with their CEO. And at some point over dinner, he had mentioned a format that they wanted to introduce into the American market. I told him I really wasn't into the format business. I was more into doing my original content. But he encouraged me to take a look at it, and I just fell in love with it. I'd never seen a show quite like it, a thriller, that was really a character study that was trapped inside a thriller and told from the point of view of two gay teenagers, you know, and a woman sheriff in a small town. So I immediately gravitated towards it.
Now, did you adapt the format as is, or did you decide, I love the format, but I want to put my own spin, my own mark, if you will, on the characters?
That's a really great question. And in looking at it, you know, you look at the one format that's really been successful. You look at Homeland, that's based on the Israeli format, Chatufim. They're very different, short, you know, of sharing a concept. They've gone their separate ways. This show was quite different. It's a really wonderful show onto its own. But I had to do two things. You know, I had to, one, adapt it for an American marketplace. For example, without giving away spoilers, in the Norwegian version, the cop who is the heroine, you know, doesn't really resolve the crime. That would be unthinkable for an American audience. And the second thing is, I needed to make it my own. I needed to find something about it that spoke to me personally that I could get into. Having said that, I very much wanted to stay loyal to the original. So when we broke down the original, I really kind of broke down, like, you know, the 12 major movements, you know, of the original, with the beginning, middle, of an end, and then simply took my own journey, you know, as I hit, you know, every one of these signposts along the way.
Talk about the main characters, the eyewitnesses. It really is, although the show is called Eyewitness, we're really talking about eyewitnesses, because about a pair of teenagers who witnessed this crime in upstate New York, and there's two very important spins here. The first spin, and it's a very big spin, and I think for members of the LGBTQ community, it's very big. The two teenagers are a gay couple. The second big spin is that the lead female character, played by Julianne Nicholson, some remember her from Law and Order, Criminal Intent, and other shows, is that she is the mother of one of these two teenagers. And that itself brings a lot of unique drama to the situation. First of all, what do you think about doing the plot in such a way that you have these two teenagers who are gay?
Well, it was, you know, this was something wonderful, and it was actually brought to my attention. This was really the first show where two gay characters were at the center of the narrative. This wasn't a show, you know, about, with a strong gay theme. It wasn't the L word. And these weren't, you know, you do see a lot, you know, LGBT characters on television. They're usually relegated to the B story, the C story, or the D story. And our story, they were one of the two major stories in the piece. And I thought that was absolutely wonderful. Complementary to that storyline, which really is a storyline about two boys, as you said, one is an openly gay boy who's a foster boy. And the other one is closeted and is really kind of dealing with coming out. Complementary to that is a Julianne Nicholson character, who is a woman of a certain age who has gone into marriage later in life, who is now a foster mother for the first time, and really dealing with her own identity issues and looking for purpose and meaning. And I thought these two storylines, you know, specifically of the boy coming out looking for his identity, coupled with the Julianne Nicholson character, the sheriff looking for her own identity as a mother, as a working mother, you know, as a wife, I thought they were very complementary towards each other and made for a wonderful drama.
Before you decided to put pen to paper on those characters, did you talk to members of the gay and lesbian community about it? Did you try to get feedback in terms of how you deal with this? One person has come out, the other hasn't, and maybe because of watching this murder that takes place, it may force the issue.
You know, something, to be honest with you, I really tapped first of all into my own experience, you know, of being a teenager in love at the age of 15 and 16. Was very fortunate to actually have our executives, both at UCP and USA, have gay executives who really, you know, kind of shared what it was like, you know, for them to come out, how they dealt with it. And it was interesting. It was almost a generational conversation. The older people got, the more difficult of a journey, you know, it was. But I will say that USA, both USA and UCP, the support in telling the story, in having an uncompromising narrative in this journey of the two boys was absolutely wonderful.
And we should note UCP is Universal Cable Productions. They're the people who do Mr. Robot, Queen of the South. A lot of the new USA Network shows that have been coming on of late. Another one is Falling Water, which I believe they're involved with too, that just premiered last night. It's a very interesting
review. I also want to mention Scott Peters is one of our executive producers, is himself gay, directed 4 episodes, and really had some really interesting, you know, insight into it. And, you know, together with him and Catherine Hardwick, you know, we really kind of hit the ground running, you know, with the subject matter.
I was glad that Scott was one of the executive producers on the 4400, which was a show that USA Network did on Sunday nights that ran 3 or 4 years, and at that time was its most successful series.
It was. Actually, he was a creator. He was the creator of that show, and was a writer of that show, segued into a director, is one of the best working, you know, directors in television right now, and we were fortunate to have him as an executive producer and as a director of 4 out of the 10 episodes.
Adia Stock is the creator and executive producer of Eyewitness. It premieres this Sunday night at 10 p.m. East Pacific time on the USA Network. And he's live with us from Los Angeles this half hour. On Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon Applebaum, who is you, along for the ride. Happy you're with us on this Friday afternoon. You have a question or comment for ID, give us a ring, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, Simon Apple 0418. We want to welcome Marcia into the room, as well as guest 952 and 794, I believe, is also in the room as well. So be involved. We want to hear from you. Next Friday, and this is our special announcement we talked about in the tease, we have an amazing guest for you. It is really very special, and I'm very proud that we have this person. He is one of the landmark innovators in television history, the creator, producer, developer of shows like All in the Family, Maud, Good Times, Mary Harmon, The Jeffersons, etc. Norman Lear will be our lead guest next Friday exclusively on Tomorrow We Televise. We will talk about his amazing career. We'll talk about his Netflix revival of One Day at a Time with Latino themes and Latino cast, and about the upcoming American Masters PBS special about his life and work. Norman Lear, live with us next Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Televise. And because we have Norman on, we're going to do something very unique. We're going to have him on the full half hour. We're not going to have commercial interruption. We're not going to have interruption for upcoming promos. It's going to be him, you and your phone calls and chat room reaction, and yours truly. Norman Lear, next Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Televise. Adi, how long did it take when you went to camera with Eyewitness to really gel the series, to gel the characters, the plot, the way it was going?
It happened actually quite quickly. I was in the middle of production on Shades of Blue, the show got ordered straight to series without a script. It was really based on the format and my relationship with the head of the studio, Don Olmsted. The show was greenlit in November, actually Thanksgiving Day of last year, and we started shooting it in Ontario the April of the following year. So it was a very intense, 5 months of putting the show together. Again, we had a really great format to work off of, and it was very important for us that that we have all the scripts done, you know, before production, which is something that we succeeded in doing.
So explain how the show goes. These two teenagers witness a murder. And what happens from there, generically?
Well, what we really, yeah, I mean, something unique happens here. You know, for those of us who go all the way back to the 70s and remember Columbo, the audience really realizes who the killer is 10 minutes into the show. So this is not your standard, you know, whodunit. And what that does is it allows us to really get into the characters. And as I said, this show is really a character study trapped inside a thriller. And what we do from then on is we really follow three love stories. The love story of these two boys, who cannot report this crime, because if they report the crime, the boy who is closeted will be outed, and he refuses to do that. We also follow the relationship of Julianne Nicholson, the sheriff, and her husband, and she struggles with her identity as a mother, as a working woman, and as a wife. And we follow the relationship of one of the FBI agents, a female FBI agent, and her sister, who seemingly seems to be somehow involved in the thriller element of the story. And much like the movie, if you think of like No Country for Old Men, the story starts, our show, which is 10 episodes and is resolved. It's a standalone series and is resolved at the end. It starts, the first several episodes start strong on plot and on story to set it up. But slowly, because we know who the killer is, the plot is still there, and we deliver certainly on thriller moments. But what it does is, like No Country for Old Men, it really allows us to get into the characters and see how does this crime affect not just the eyewitnesses, but also the people, you know, who get sucked into this cycle of violence.
Hmm. Fascinating. I mentioned Norman Lear, and one of the series he tried way back when is a show called All the Glitters. It was a show about, it was a workplace comedy, 5 days a week, and the idea was the men are going to act like women, the women are going to act like men. And the show at the time got mixed to negative reviews. It now is being seen in a more favorable light in light of today's contemporary mores. And it sounds like an eyewitness, you're trying to do the same thing where you have the women really in a very strong position and the men in sort of like exhibiting the other way around.
Well, yeah, thanks for bringing that up. It really, the way we discuss this, it's really much like No Country for Old Men in its own way. This is a revisionist Western. Only the difference here is it's really a story about a sheriff in a small town. A killer shows up, and she has to find him. The interesting thing here is, and I'm aware of a lot of Norman Lear's work. I wasn't aware of that show, so thank you. It's really, you know, we're really flipping it here. And the women here are empowered. The women here are the ones who hold the guns. The women are here who resolve the crime, you know, and take down the bad guy. And so it's a really interesting, you know, flip on the genres and you know, something that made this show, I think, you know, extremely fresh.
Mm-hmm. How do you explore that idea of women having the power or being empowered and dealing with the fact that at any time you could pull that gun out or you could be, given Julianne's character in particular, at any moment you could be facing the perpetrator?
Well, you know, this is something that what makes her character so unique, and this is why we get deep into the relationship with her husband. She has this loving husband who's extremely supportive. We find out that she was a detective in Buffalo. There's some kind of backstory in Buffalo, some kind of a trauma that led her to this little town. But we see her as a character who's kind of really dying at the job. There's nothing to do in this little town except for to put cones around trees that fall on streets. And all of a sudden, when this murder shows up, it almost brings her back to life. She tells her husband at some point, I'm searching for purpose and meaning, and in a weird way, this murder and resolving this crime gives her a sense of purpose and meaning. And we study that, you know, how it affects the relationship. But even this husband, who's so loving and so supportive, you know, is having issues with the fact that this murder is drawing his wife, you know, away from him and really drawing her, you know, into the mystery that she is bent on resolving.
Mm-hmm. In Shades of Blue, which is your other hit show right now for NBC, Jennifer Lopez stars as a police detective who some people is found to be suspicious of being on the take or being part of a police department that's on the take. In Eyewitness, did you want to explore that theme further?
You know, yes, you know, absolutely. And you'll see that, you know, when, especially with quote unquote, the bad guy, the killer, we start to slowly unravel who, you know, who he is. I mean, what I'm really interested in is not, you know, the black hat and the white hat. I'm just interested in the humanity of characters in general, be they good or be they bad. I mean, even bad guys. I mean, short of serial killers and the worst types, you know, even bad guys have mothers. They could have children. They're in relationships. They celebrate birthdays. And so the humanity and the multidimensional flair of the characters is really interesting to me. And so my, you know, my job is to, you know, is to introduce conflict into the characters. So by all means, you know, whether it's the Julianne Nicholson character and her backstory, what happened exactly in Buffalo, which comes to play in future episodes, you know, or if it's the quote unquote bad guy, who we realize has other sides to him. That's something that was very interesting to me and something I wanted to continue and explore in Eyewitness.
Julianne Nicholson is one of those characters, one of those people that the face is so familiar, but you don't get the name. This may be the role that breaks her out beyond the face recognition. That I've always enjoyed her acting. I remember Law and Order Criminal Intent. She was on opposite Jeff Goldblum, which was at one point a USA Network series that was revived when it was canceled by NBC. What would you like to work with her? Do you think that this is, in fact, the role that's going to make her more of a star?
Listen, yes. The short answer is yes. Julianne Nicholson, I have never worked with an actress at her level. She is simply at the height of her creative superpowers. If this show, there were a lot of components to bring this show together, but the inspiration, the level we all reached had everything to do with Julianne Nicholson and her excellence. This is a woman who's been a scene, like you said, a scene stealer, you know, for many, many years. There's a lot of love for her in the community, and we're all really rooting and hoping that this is the show, you know, where she really breaks out and gets her due, which she's deserved for quite some time.
We are speaking with Adini Hasak, and he is the creator and executive producer of Eyewitness. It's the new USA Network series that premieres this Sunday night at 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time. It's based on an overseas format. It's a very unique take on anthology, where each season it will deal with a crime, but more importantly, the people who witness the crime and what happens from there. Adini joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour right here on Suburbia Televised. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. Happy to have you aboard. If you have a question or a comment, use this number, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04, and welcome guest 594, and Marcia Coonsworth into the room. You can find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/television. We've got two episodes coming your way next week, Tuesday, not Monday, Tuesday and Friday at this very same hour. And we have another 90-minute show coming your way on Tuesday. We kick it off where we go live to Australia, and we'll speak with the creator and executive producer of the hit upbeat movie Wolf Creek. It's becoming a TV series that Pop Network will premiere tomorrow night. And Ray McLean, the director and creator of the film, the creator executive producer of the series, will join us live. Again, we will catch him live from Australia. Then, Australia TV is becoming a very popular Spanish language network, and now that at least one Spanish language network is going off the air, what will that mean for Australia? And its prime time schedule, which does not use a single telenovela, and it's all produced out of Los Angeles. We'll have the chief operating officer of that network, Winter Horton. And finally, Sci-Fi, which, like USA, is owned by NBC Universal, has got a new series and a new anthology series of its own that is premiering. It's called Channel Zero. And we will have the producer of that series, Nick Antopka, will join us. That's all next Tuesday at our regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Talk about working with Catherine Hardwicke, the director of the original Twilight movie. She's doing the episode we're going to see on Sunday night and the one after. What's it been like working with her?
She's spectacular. I mean, besides being, you know, a woman director and forging a career when it was extremely difficult for women to do so, she is that unique director who can both give, I mean, she's an artist at the end of the day. She used to be an architect, then she was an art designer, a set designer. What she brought to it was, you know, first of all, was a look, was a creative look, was her interpretation, you know, of the Nordic noir. But she also has the ability, the extreme amazing ability of working with actors, specifically with young actors. So if you look at her first movie, 13, all the way through Twilight, that's really what she brings to the table. And it's unique to have that. Usually you'll either have a director who's really good at giving something a look or another director who's really good with actors. She's one of these unique directors who can do both, and she did a spectacular job.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that there's a lot of diversity on the series, both in front of and behind the camera. Obviously in front of, in a number of more ways than one, absolutely. But what was it like behind the camera, too?
Well, we had there were a lot of women. I mean, our we had a lot of women on set. My partner in this is a woman named Jennifer Cote, who was a writing producer on set. There was a young woman named Kendall McKinnon who worked with me on the writing of the scripts. There were a lot of women, you know, on the crew. It was led by, you know, again, Catherine Hardwicke, the head of our studio, Dawn Olmsted, you know, is a woman. There were a lot of women, you know, who were involved in this production.
Mm-hmm. This has been a very big year for you, really your breakout year. Shades of Blue coming on early this year on NBC, turning out to be a winner, coming back for a second season now. Eyewitness, what do you make of your career? And you've hit this point where you could, right after Sunday night, have two successful series in one year.
Well, you know, it's been a long time in coming. It's been about working really, really hard about, you know, the craft of writing, you know, takes time. It takes years and years to write some really bad scripts to eventually get to the point where you can write some decent scripts. I do feel really blessed. Both series went straight to series, which means there was no pilot. And, you know, we're very enthusiastic about a second season for Eyewitness. As you said, it'll be an anthology. Season two will be a completely different story, but again, told from the point of view of an eyewitness. So we just want to, you know, the main thing I want to do is just build on it. Smart, character-driven genre. The pressure on us today is there's so much noise out there is to create content that rises above the noise that actually has people put down their, you know, iPads, put down their phones and actually engage, you know, with the show. And that's hopefully what we'll be doing in years to come.
Do you already have a second season of Eyewitness plan in terms of the main plot, how you want to develop it?
Yes, you know, I certainly have a very good idea. Again, the Norwegian version was a one and done. That means they did one season, which is done often in Europe, and then they just wrap the show. I definitely have in my mind one or two scenarios, and I'm very excited to speak to USA about, you know, if they choose to, you know, to continue into a second season.
And when do you go back into production with Jennifer Lopez and everyone on Shades of Blue?
We are already in production. The show's in production. It wraps production at around November, and it should premiere in January of next year.
But before then, it's Eyewitness, and the first season of this show will premiere this Sunday night on USA Network. It's 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time. Check your local listings where USA Network is in your area on cable and satellite. And for more details about the program online, here's where you go, www.usanetwork.com. www.usanetwork.com. First two episodes directed by Catherine Hardwicke, the director of the original Twilight movie. And again, Eyewitness, this Sunday on USA Network, 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific time, which is done by USA Network in conjunction with Universal Cable Productions, which also is the producer of Mr. Robot, Queen of the South, and other USA Network original series. Aziz Sock, creator, executive producer, thank you for joining us. Congratulations on getting this show off the ground and what it hopes to do. And also congratulations on a great first year of Shades of Blue. Looking forward to season two coming up next year on NBC. And all the very best to you. And hopefully, just like Shades of Blue, Eyewitness becomes a long runner.
I really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Eddie. We'll have you back soon, hopefully. Take care.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
Aziz Sock, executive producer and creator of Eyewitness and creator and executive producer of Shades of Blue, joining us live from Los Angeles. We'll have our Clappertrini question and answer in a moment, but first, some words from the fine people at Audible.com and Amazon Company. A lot of folks out there are into the Pokemon Go phenomenon. Pokemon Go all over the place. Well, if you want to build on your Pokemon Go skills, no matter how you get that game, well, here's the way you can do it. It's a brand new audiobook called Pokemon Go, The Next Level Guide. And you can get it with a free trial subscription to Audible.com. It is the leader of spoken audio entertainment and information, all digitally distributed, with over 180,000 titles to choose from. And you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you are hearing us on right now, at Blog Talk Radio. Remember, if you sign up at audibletrial.com/televised, that's audibletrial.com/televised, you get one free audiobook of your choice and a 1-month trial of the service. And knowing that Audible is from Amazon, you know the customer service is going to be incredibly great. So give Audible a try, whether it's Pokemon Go, The Next Level Guide, whether it's Hans Christian Andersen Tales, narrated by wonderful stars, whether it is great radio from the past or great TV from the present, whatever your make or model of great audio is, you will find it at Audible.com. Remember, you want that 30-day trial for your audiobook? It's audibletrial.com/televised. Audibletrial.com/televised. Audible.com. And Amazon Company. And now it's time for the answer to our Clappertrini question of the week that we posed on Monday. And unfortunately, nobody got the answer, so we're not going to be able to give out the Twin Peaks FAQ book. And unfortunately, we did not have the opportunity to give out the tickets to Kiki Melendez's Multicultural Sizzle Up Front event in Los Angeles. Two VIP tickets were at stake. That event was held last night in L.A. Did very, very well from what I understand. And we will follow what fallout there is from that event, which was done both here in New York on September 30th, as I said, in L.A. last night. The question we posed on Monday was this. On the most recent version of the Hollywood Squares, who was the center square? On the most recent version of the Hollywood Squares hosted by Tom Bergeron in syndication, who was the center square? Well, when we had Kiki on the program on Tuesday, somebody called up and said, Bruce Valanche. Yes, he was in that series, but he wasn't the center square. Who was? Whoopi Goldberg. That's right, Whoopi Goldberg, one of the big hosts of The View on ABC now. She was the center square on the most recent edition of The Hollywood Squares, at that time hosted by the host of Dancing with the Stars, Tom Bergeron. Sorry we didn't give away the Twin Peaks FAQ or the Multicultural Sizzle Reel Upfront ticket, but we'll try again on Monday with a brand new question. And because Norman Lear is our special guest coming up next Friday, it will be a Norman Lear question. So you got a little bit of a hint about what it's going to be. So tune in on Monday for our next Classic Trivia Question of the Week when we pose the question. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to include your name and where you're from, full mailing address. If you're first with the correct answer, you will win the new book, Twin Peaks FAQ, published by Applause. It's all about the classic 1990s ABC mystery series under the tutelage of David Lynch and Mark Frost, and they will be back aboard when Twin Peaks is revived next year on Showtime. Frost and Lynch will write all the episodes, Lynch will direct, and many of the original stars, including Carl McLaughlin, will be on board. So that's Twin Peaks FAQ. You can win it by being involved with our Classic Trivia Question of the Week. So listen on Monday when we pose the question. And for some reason, if you don't get the question on Monday, no problem. We'll post it Tuesday morning on my Facebook page and on my own Twitter hashtag at UBC Simon TWBT. That's UBC Simon TWBT. And speaking of Twitter, you can use Twitter to be involved in our weekly contest. All you have to do is tweet the answer to hashtag TWBT. This hashtag TWBT. The Twitter option is made available by the wonderful people at Hopscotch. The folks invite you to create your own social soundtrack, and you can learn how to do it at hopscotch.com. It's www.hopscotch.com. Coming up on our next half hour, we're going live to New York, and we're speaking with the people behind the new Epics drama, Berlin Station. It's one of the two original scripted series that will launch Epics into that arena. We will have the creator and executive producer, Olin Steinauer, and executive producer, Bradford Winters. They'll join me next after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You are connected to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com. More than 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for We Talk Radio. Subject coming up, the hip-hop scene. And it happens today, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific, We Talk Radio, right here on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, you can find the best of Blog Talk Radio every day, 24/7, at YouTube.com. So check it out. And welcome back to our 90-minute edition on a Friday afternoon of Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Applebaum with you live from the Big Apple, New York, 59 degrees at the top of the hour. More wonderful people coming your way in the hour ahead. And we invite you to be involved by using this number, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, Simon Apple 0418. Marcia Killingsworth is still in the room along with guest 608-594-591 and 580. So use the phone or the room. Either way, we will hear you. As I mentioned earlier, we started this week showcasing one of the two Epics scripted original series that is coming your way this Sunday night and introducing them to the world of scripted television. That series is called Graves. It's already won rave reviews for the series, which stars Nick Nolte as ex-president who is pulling a Don Quixote on his life. Well, the other show, the show that comes on before Graves, is what we're going to talk about now. It's called Berlin Station. It's a contemporary spy drama, and it premieres at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on Epics. Joining us live from New York are the two people who are making this show happen. First, in his first television series, New York Times bestselling writer, Olin Steinauer. Olin, great to have you with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
It is a pleasure. And also joining both of us is one of the executive producers of this series. He also has done quite a bit of work with shows such as The Americans, Boss, Oz, and Dig, which was the USA Today series a year or so back. It's a pleasure to welcome Bradford Winters. Bradford, welcome in.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Oh, we'll start with you. What motivated you to enter television and air television with Berlin Station?
I'm sorry, repeat that question? I didn't quite catch it.
Yes, Owen, what motivated you to get involved with television and get involved with television with this particular project?
Well, look, I mean, it was television is so good these days. You know, I'm old enough to remember when it wasn't quite like it is now. And ever since I saw The Wire, you know, it occurred to me that, oh, my God, the things that can be done on TV are different than what can be done in novels. And, you know, you have an idea. At first, I thought I might make it a novel. But then I quickly realized that this is better as a TV series because really good TV is about world building. And that's what we try and do in Berlin Station. We try and create this sort of universe of the embassy and the CIA station and the life of living as an expat in Berlin. And it all seemed to work out much better as a TV show than a novel.
And Bradford, you've had experience with shows like espionage, shows like The Americans. How did you apply that to this series?
Well, I think what Olin just said is key in terms of the world building. And when I first read his pilot, that was one of the things that jumped out at me, was that this is a world, you know, that we'd be entering. I was delighted to know from the outset that the show would be shooting in Berlin. And really hand it to Paramount Studios and Epics for having that commitment from the get-go. And knowing that just presented a really exciting opportunity where, you know, you get to build the world of the production within the world of the setting, which is often not the case in television where, you know, where you're shooting is not where the show is set and vice versa. So this was a very special opportunity, and I jumped on it.
Mm-hmm. Owen, how did you jump on this? What kind of a world are we going to see on Sunday night in Berlin?
Well, I think you're going to see. Well, one of the things about this is I wanted to show Berlin. Berlin is really a character in this show, as almost as much as any of the living, breathing characters. And I wanted to show off Berlin. It's a city I know to some degree and that I love. And I know that Americans come to it not really with a certain Cold War image of it. And we wanted to say, no, this is a cutting edge city, kind of the New York of Europe right now. And so that's one thing you'll see. But what you'll also be in is this sort of hothouse atmosphere of the station. You have a CIA station that's being slowly decimated by these leaks that are coming out, these embarrassing leaks that result in people losing their jobs, being arrested, and everyone is under pressure to perform. And there's also a level of mistrust. These are all spies, and they all have their own secrets, and they know everybody else has secrets, which is kind of builds this tension in this world. And into this world comes Daniel Miller, who's come in to figure out who the leak might be. And he sort of comes in and is faced with this, just kind of plunges right into this world that he's completely not familiar with. And I think it'll be an enjoyable ride for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Bradford, what was the most enjoyable part of the ride for you in terms of bringing Olin's world to life?
I would say it was the execution of a vision that was there from the get-go. And of course, any show goes through any number of revisions along the way when it goes from the page to production to screen. But I think what I feel in some ways happiest and proudest about is that fact that, you know, what is going to come on the air Sunday evening is so utterly familiar to the experience that I had when I first read the script. And, you know, it took a tremendous amount of effort to get there, of course. But, there was a unified creative sense, between us and with the writers as to, you know, as to how to bring that forth for all of the changes that, that we put it through. I think at the end of the day, it stands true to what it set out to be, which is exactly what Olin just said, which is this sort of kaleidoscopic view of of obviously the very, in some ways, insular world of a CIA station set inside this very open world of Berlin of the new millennium. And it provides a wonderful contrast. And going to Berlin for the first time, whereas Olin had spent real time there, and that had greatly informed his conception of the show. It was my first time in Berlin, but going there, I quickly saw why the city lends itself so well to the espionage genre, and it was just wonderful to be able to tap that to its full extent, thanks to our amazing line producer and the crew that he assembled for the job.
The show we're talking about is Berlin Station. It is Epic's introduction into the world of scripted television. It was produced in Berlin by Paramount TV and Anonymous Content. If you know that company, you know it's the company that made Mr. Robot. And this is their latest original work. And the premiere is on Epic this Sunday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, followed at 10 by the other new Epic original, Graves, starring Nick Nolte. We're speaking with the creator and executive producer of the series, first time in television, former New York Times bestseller Olin Steinhauer, and executive producer Bradford Winters. They're both joining me here in New York this half hour. On Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon Applebaum with you. Happy you're joining us this Friday afternoon. Thanks for wrapping up your week with us. And if you have a question or comment for both of our guests, give us a ring, 646-652-2906. That number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country, around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio. Or use our chat room, you will find it, Simon Apple 04 by name, at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. So either way, we want to hear you by phone or by chat room. If you missed our big announcement, next Friday on the program, a live exclusive interview with one of the hallmark people in all of television, Norman Lear, the mastermind behind All the Family, The Jeffersons, Maude, Good Times. He's working with Netflix on the Latino-flavored revival of One Day at a Time for next year, and he is the subject of the latest edition of American Masters, premiering on PBS a week from Tuesday, October 25th. Norman Lear, live with us, with no commercial or promotional interruption during that first half hour. It's live next Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Bradford, there's a lot of wonderful minds at work with both of you on this series. You have Eric Roth, the terrific producer whose work includes Forrest Gump. You got the people at Anonymous Content, headed by Steve Golan. And you got a very interesting cast led by Richard Armitage, and also Michelle Forbes, who is so memorable as the wife in The Killing.
Yeah. It's an amazing collection of talent. I came along when, of course, Olin and Anonymous and Eric Roth and those folks were already working together. So I was very lucky to join that group. And then shortly thereafter, we started the casting process. And it's an extraordinary cast, and I don't think we could speak more highly about it. And the beauty of it was how it came together. We did not go into the casting process with any predetermined notions of these particular actors or actresses playing these characters. But we quickly came to a point where you couldn't really imagine anybody else playing these parts. And the way they embody them, the way they inhabit them, is just remarkable. And they're a group that brings such stature and life experience to their characters, and I think the show should really be recognized for that alone. Hopefully other things as well. But it was an honor and a pleasure to work with them.
Owen, when you dive into a medium like television for the first time after years as an author, what's the biggest thing you have to learn to work in this TV environment, work with executive producers like Bradford, with fellow writers, with fellow actors, under also the fact that this is the debut of a television network's work in scripted, the way FX is showcasing this?
Well, the only hurdle I had to get over probably was collaboration, because my life for, over a decade has been, I walk into a room, shut the door, and a year later, I hand a whole story to someone. And, I get a few notes back, I make some changes, and it's published, all done. And this is so different, going in and having a writer's room with all these excellent writers coming up with these ideas. It was difficult at first, but what you get out of it is you get ideas and perspectives that are completely outside of your head, things you would have never thought to add into a story. And that sort of enriches the whole world, and it gives it depth, and it makes it more interesting and unexpected. We have a number of turns sort of as the season moves on that I never planned for, and in fact, none of us did. But it was that collaboration, that group of people, every day, like 12 hours a day, batting ideas back and forth, that ended up taking us into other directions. So for example, the show becomes much more high octane by mid-season. Once we've set up all the dominoes very carefully in the first half of the season, we just start smashing them down. And it makes for, some high octane television. Surprisingly, that was never what I planned to do, but it made it exciting and interesting, and it still kept on to like the central ideas of the show. And it was the big leap, but I think the results will speak for themselves. It's pretty good.
Bradford, by virtue of your role as an executive producer, you are a collaborator. You collaborate with writers, you collaborate with actors, your crew, and you're even collaborating with a city, in this case Berlin, that has rarely been seen like this since Germany was united. Remember, you know, we had all these spy thrillers where it was East Germany, West Germany, clandestine, you know, spies came in from the cold, John le Carré kind of situation. In that environment, how do you bring someone who is new to the medium like Olin and have him succeed?
Well, I mean, you know, that itself was a collaboration. And you know, this was Olin's creation, and given his background in spy fiction, we obviously relied on a lot of the experience and knowledge he brought of the genre as well. And so, you know, I mean, I think the hurdle of collaboration that Olin speaks to, is true. And I can relate. I mean, I come from a background where I came into screenwriting sort of in an unforeseen way, and that was new to me when I started. So, but at the end of the day, I think it provides us more solitary inclined writers with a counterpoint and a challenge and an antidote to a lot of the, you know, struggles one faces in the space of his own solitude. So, and Olin's knowledge of the city, his prior experience there, you know, was a big help. But once the room came together, and the writer's room came together, and once we had, you know, the production team in place, it really was, you know, a joint effort every step of the way.
That's a good point, because once we had all the production crew together, then you start getting feedback there, and new ideas come in even from outside the writer's room, which I didn't know that happened, you know, in TV, and that was actually pretty exciting.
Yeah, and see, even when you start to see the dailies, I mean, our amazingly talented director of photography, Hagen, who worked on The Lives of Others, and our production designer, Marco, who worked on Inglourious Basterds. I mean, even seeing the original dailies in the early days of shooting, the style and the look and all of that began also to shape some of our sensibilities going forward. So at no point is this a the mandate of a single person, even Olin as creator and even me as showrunner. Various creators and showrunners, have their own philosophies and models of how to run things. But I think there was an understanding from the get-go that we were all in this together and we were only going to accomplish it together.
Mm-hmm. Talk about working with the cast you had, people like Richard Armitage, people like Richard Jenkins, I mentioned Michelle Forbes, Tamla Tamina, who many of us still remember as Ralph Macchio's girlfriend in Karate Kid Part 2, and you haven't seen what she's done ever since. She's really turned out to be some actress. Mina Tender, etc. You have a wonderful – how do they blend in? How do their characters blend into this whole picture of Berlin circa 2016?
Well, one of the happy circumstances of this cast is that from practically day one, they all got along famously with each other offset. I remember vividly the night of our table read where we had a cast dinner that evening. And I'll never forget looking across the restaurant and seeing all our main cast, those who you just mentioned, plus a few more of their German counterparts, all sitting together and talking and getting along. And it was an extraordinary sight. And I think that really helped. And I think what our American cast did so well is render that dual phenomenon of both deeply blending into a society, because of course, as members of the CIA, that's sort of job number one. But at the same time, being outsiders to it. So living both on the inside and on the outside of a society that they are there, of course, to penetrate at certain levels. And I think this, you know, this cast has just did such an extraordinary job of that, of having of having access to a city and a handle on the city, unlike, of course, any American, any mere American tourist or most other American overseas expatriates or employees. But at the same time, you know, never not being that outsider whose jobs, by virtue of the job description, could get them on the next plane home at any given moment. And I think that tension of the job, they render quite beautifully.
Berlin Station is Epic's first original scripted television series. It's paired with Graves, and they're on from 9 to 10:30. Berlin Station from 9 to 10, Graves from 10 to 10:30 this Sunday night. We are speaking with the creator, executive producer, first-timer in television, Oleg Steinauer, and executive producer Bradford Winters, whose credits in TV include U.S. Network's Dig, the critically acclaimed an Emmy Award and Peabody Award-winning show The Americans, going to its final season on FX, by the way, next year, Boss, one of Starz's first wonderful shows, after 2 years with Kelsey Grammer, and yes, one of the great classics of HBO, Oz. And the vote with us live from New York this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise. Simon Applebaum here with you. Happy you're with us this Friday afternoon, also from the Big Apple. If you have a question or comment, bring it in, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We've got guest 591 and 608, and Rick Webb, our friend from Philadelphia, has also joined the room. By the way, in addition to Norman Lear next Friday, we will also have a terrific writer who covers the digital media scene for CNNnews.com. She's been on the program before, Joan Sulzman. We'll talk to her about smart TV sets, smart TV devices, where things are at with virtual reality on the television set, augmented reality, interactive programming, and a whole lot more on her beat for News.com. Joan Sulzman from News.com at CNET joins me live with Norman Lear next Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Televise. And coming up later this month on our program, we'll have exclusive interviews with the commissioner of the New York City Mayor's Office of Media Entertainment, Julie Menon, and the creator executive producer of the new TBS comedy People of Earth, executive produced by Conan O'Brien. That's David Jenkins. I've seen clips of that show. I think TBS has a winner with this new series. That's premiering, by the way, near the end of the month. And David will be on near the end of the month. Also, live and exclusive on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Bradford, how did the city of Berlin welcome you and your crew?
Oh, it could not have been a warmer welcome. You know, given the golden age of television that we're living in, I'll admit that, you know, as an American showrunner in that landscape, I went over to Berlin thinking, oh, you know, maybe this is going to be a bit of a bumpy ride, a bit of a steep learning curve for their crew and their system to to deliver the kind of sophisticated cable drama that we aspire to for the American market. But luckily, that thought was quickly turned on its head, and we found ourselves in the hands of our extraordinary world-class line producer, Michael Scheel, and the crew that he assembled, and the folks of Studio Babelsberg in Berlin, where our stages were based, and the city was just so inviting and opened doors at every turn and granted subsidies where needed. So it really could not have been more fluid, and frankly far more fluid than many a production experience here in the country. So I kind of think of it as an exemplary experience when it comes to production.
And Olin, what about Berlin, particularly now that it is part of a united Germany, what was the most important thing you wanted to express about that city in your story?
I think we might have lost Olin, Simon. So I'm just going to...
And Olin, if you're hearing us, call back if you can. We'll get you on. Bradford, why don't you answer the question? What do you think was the most important thing, knowing Olin, what was the most important thing to say about Berlin?
Well, I think, and I know I'm speaking as well for Olin on this point, which is the fact that when you think spy drama set in Berlin, you instantly think period piece, Cold War, and that is when I first heard of it. That's what I thought, And invariably, when I first told people about the coming job in Berlin, that's what they thought. But one of Olin's points early on in coming up with the show, and certainly ours in making the show, was to sort of turn that on its head and show the Berlin of today, which is, you know, quite a thriving city in the wake of the Cold War, and really make an effort to shake that identity, to shed that old skin that it carries far more, you know, in people's minds abroad than it does on the ground in Berlin. And that was, you know, an opportunity to do something quite fresh.
Before we go, Bradford, compare the experience of working with Epix, which is entering this huge panorama of scripted television right now, through your show and with Graves. What was it like to work with them? How does it compare with some of the other networks like USA and FX and so forth that you've worked with in your career?
Well, I guess I would compare it most closely to working with HBO on Oz, in that that was the first scripted drama series for Oz back then, and this being the first scripted drama series for Epix. And, you know, that's an exciting time to come in at the ground floor when a network is putting out their first scripted programming. In both cases, it was a wonderful experience. Of course, I was not showrunner on Oz at the time. I was one of the writers. But as showrunner on Berlin Station and working with the wonderful folks at Epix, particularly Jocelyn Diaz, who was so closely involved in our endeavor every step of the way, and of course the CEO Mark Greenberg, they just could not have provided a better home for us. All the support that we needed, bringing lots of experience to the table, yet having that that inclination for risk and adventure that does make this kind of endeavor an exciting one. And you know, of course, we hope that that this proves to be a success for them, because they really deserve it.
The show is Berlin Station, and it opens the door for Epix into the world of scripted television, along with the show that will follow it, Graves. Berlin Station is at 9 o'clock Sunday night, Eastern Pacific Time, followed by Graves at 10. Check your locals for where Epix is available in your area on cable and satellite. And for more details about the program online, here's where you go, www.epixepix.com. That's www.epixepix.com. And Mark Greenberg, the chief of Epix, will be in New York delivering one of the keynote speeches at NYC TV and Video Week on Wednesday during the next TV Summit. I will be there at the Grand Hyatt Hotel. If you're in the TV industry, check it out. I have a feeling Mark will have some wonderful things to say about both shows and where Epix will go with more original scripted television. Bradford Winter, the executive producer of Berlin Station, along with Owen Steinhauer, the creator and executive producer. Thank you both for coming on. Congratulations on getting this off the ground. Congratulations, Owen, on becoming the newest member of the TV writing and producing fraternity. And all the very best for a wonderful run.
Thank you so much for having us.
It is a pleasure, and you're welcome. Both of you are welcome back anytime. It's been a delight on our end, too. All the greatest. Take care, and all the best Sunday night.
Okay, thank you so much, Simon. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye now. Bradford Winter, Noah Steinhauer from Berlin Station, joining us live here in New York. This is Tomorrow Be Televised. We are the program all about the tube. We're with you Mondays and Fridays, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Blog Talk Radio. And if you're joining us for the first time, you should know that we have a lot of wonderful episodes we've had this month with people like Josh Michael Stern, the creator of Graves, people like Ron Gorey, the director of Killing Reagan, which is on Naturopathic Channel on Sunday night, Thomas Hayden Church, the co-star of Divorce, also on HBO Sunday night, and Kiki Melendez, the organizer of the recent Multicultural Sizzle Wheel Up Front here in New York and last night in Los Angeles. If you want to hear all those episodes and much, much more, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's blogtalkradio.com/televised, available 24/7. And if you check out the podcast version at iTunes.com, and if you have Apple TV, the iTunes podcast app, you can hear our show as well as other Blog Talk Radio programs as well, anytime you like. If you don't have Apple TV, don't forget, you can go to your Apple store near you or order it online. And remember, we love hearing from you. So what do you think about our guest today? What's your thoughts on where TV's anger is going? Email us, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. SimonApple04@yahoo.com. That's how you get involved in our classic trivia question of the week. You can also be involved in our regular feature, Show to Know. Is there a TV show you like you think doesn't get enough attention? Well, if you let me know about it and we highlight it on an upcoming episode, you, of course, will get the credit. At SimonApple04@yahoo.com. You can also find me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, at UBCSimon, TWBT. When we come back, NBC now makes its move into live-action programming on Saturday mornings, and one of their shows, Among the More to Know, is very special. You will get to know about Give from executive producer Gary Reeves. He joins us live from San Francisco after we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. This is the place for the best internet radio around, www.blogtalkradio.com. More than 25 million listeners around the world every month, and growing. It's your home for Connect Safety. All you need to know about preventing internet piracy, crime, whatever, in this world of the web. Check out Connect Safety Sundays, various times, right here on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, you can catch the best of BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the Marley Televised for this Friday afternoon, and welcome to those of you just joining us at the top of the hour. Simon Applebaum here with you live from New York, 59 degrees at the top of the hour. Beautiful day outside this fair city, and we thank you for tuning us in at the show about the world of television at the top of the hour. Another great guest coming your way, this time from San Fran, and we invite you to be part of the program, so give us a ring, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anywhere you are catching us across the country or around the globe here on BTR. Our chat room is going good today. Simon Apple 04 by name. You'll find it on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And we get, 501, 605, 625. We've got Rick Rowe, our friend from Philadelphia. Marsha Killingworth has been with us since near the start of the program. They're all in the room, so join them and be involved. We want to hear from you because what you say matters. And while the program is on the air, you connect with others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your blog talk screen, follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. Last Saturday, NBC became the latest broadcast television network to go from animated programming on a Saturday morning to live-action programming, and they did it with the organization that's become the home for Saturday morning television, Lynn Entertainment. Their three-hour block is called The More You Know, based on the network's long-running public service campaign. And one of their programs is very, very special. It's a program that runs at noon Eastern and Pacific time. It's called Give, and giving us his benefit of what it's all about right now, live from San Francisco, is executive producer Gary Reeves. Hi, Gary.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you. Tell us about Give and how long it's been in development for NBC.
Well, you know, we had our first episode this past Saturday, which was received very well in the market. So thank all of those out there that helped make it a success. And it was actually an ideal kind of brewing for the last 5 months. Blair Underwood, who's my business partner and dear friend, you know, we've been involved in social good and philanthropy and community service for over 15 years. And I just felt, you know, there was a time, or this was the time, to kind of help smaller nonprofits and community advocates to have an opportunity to be showcased. Of course, the battle with Feel Good TV is, you know, finding those that would embrace it and champion it. And I think we were able to assemble a great team with Bobby Freeman and Anthony Melikoff and Chad Warren and Blair and Jenna Bush and Liz. I mean, the entire team that was able to pull this off prove that, you know, people do want to see Feel Good TV and, more importantly, champion those individuals that are really making a difference in the community on a grassroots level.
What makes your program very special, Gary, is that it points a spotlight on charities that we don't hear about in the news, charities that don't use advertising or public service messages, whether, you know, you think of the United Way, you think of the 90-year-old College Fund, you think of the Advertising Council, one that's done for years with Smokey the Bear and preventing forest fires. And we're not, by the way, knocking the Ad Council. I mean, charities, of course, who use public service messages are marvelous organizations. But here you get the opportunity to see more of the grassroots campaign, the grassroots initiatives that people just like you and me put together. And you do it in sort of an undercover boss kind of way.
Yeah, I mean, one of the challenges always when you have feel-good TV is how do you make it compelling and entertaining. And so we kind of, you know, use the undercover boss concept with putting the celebrity kind of in an ambassador category, but not so undercover where they're disguised, but kind of going in there with one intention, but they're really there to look at, you know, I think for the viewership, you know, we want to show transparency to make sure that the viewers understand, hey, this organization has been vetted. They're doing great work. Any money that would be, you know, designated to them would be used properly. And more importantly, what's the outcomes of their work? And so that allowed for that to happen, to dig deeper into the organization and kind of showcase the work. And then at the end of the day, we leave them with a contribution, you know. And so it really is a win-win-win, because the great win is putting them on television where the world can see their work, to bringing them closer to foundations that have been gracious enough to support each episode because they advocate for that category or that sector. And then the celebrity gets exposed to the work as well. So it's one of those serendipitous things where you never know, you know, who's watching, who's touched by it, and then hopefully you catch lightning in a bottle and you know, we're all collectively making a difference.
Something else about this show that is quite special is that it gives celebrities in different walks of life the opportunity to see firsthand what the charity does, what the initiative does. And we're seeing more than on television. Years of Living Dangerously, which started in Showtime, is coming back October 30th on National Geographic Channel. It has celebrities dealing with issues of climate change. You have America Divided, which is on Epix, their latest original non-scripted series, which again has celebrities in the thick of learning what these issues are all about. How do you pair the celebrity with the charities that they look at? Is there a science to it?
Yeah, we try to make sure that, you know, again, for transparency and to be authentic, right? It's, you want celebrities stating something that they believe in reference to the work that Blair has done over the years. We've always, you know, everyone's doing great work, but more importantly, it has to touch your heart and, you know, and it has to be authentic. And so we try to be very conscious. Liz, who's our showrunner, who's fantastic, and Bobby and the staff there at Bungalow do a great job of vetting to make sure that there's a seamless thread that says, hey, it's every phase of this is organic and natural in reference to what the mission is. So we don't just place them for the sake of placing them, but, you know, the believability factor is so important when you talk about trying to advocate for somebody.
Mm-hmm. Is this a case of where the charities themselves contacted you and your production crew or NBC or Lin Entertainment, which is the people behind the More You Know block, as well as many of the World of Adventure and so forth that they do, Weekend Adventure they do for the other networks. Did you have the charities go to a central source so that you got the information about them, or is it a case of having to do investigative work to find these charities and bring them to light?
Kind of a collection of all of what you just mentioned. More importantly, they were all vetted, meaning, you know, making sure that their work is pure, intentions are right. And then, you know, from that standpoint, because we really had a really interesting timetable to deliver these shows. So we weren't allowed to really open it up, the platform, the way we really want to, moving into hopefully season two, if all things work well. But, yeah, so more importantly was to vet the organization to make sure that their work was pure.
Gary Reams is one of the executives. Sorry, go ahead, Gary.
No, I'm just saying, collectively, they came through it through many mediums.
Mm-hmm. Gary Reeves is the executive producer of Give. It runs as part of NBC's new Saturday morning block, The More You Know, which is based on their long-running public service campaign running both on the network and on their stations across the country. Give runs on most NBC stations at noon Eastern Pacific time on Saturdays, and we've got Gary with us live from San Francisco this half hour. On Tomorrow will be televised. Donovan Applebaum with you from the other coast in New York. Happy to have you with us, wrapping up your Friday and your week with us. If you have a question or comment for Gary, give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04, my name is 605-626, and Rick Weber, our friend from Philadelphia, is in the room. I think somebody else came in the room. Hope that person comes back as well. If you missed our big announcement in our first hour, we want to let you know that next Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, our lead guest will be one of the great innovators in all of television history. The one and only Norman Lear will be our lead guest. Yes, the creator, executive producer, developer of All in the Family, The Jeffersons, Maude, One Day at a Time, Mary Harmon, All the Glitters, et cetera, will be with us. We'll talk about his career. We'll talk about his involvement with the Netflix revival of One Day at a Time with a Latino cast and Latino themes, and the American Masters special on his career that will premiere on PBS a week from Tuesday, October 25th. Norman Lear, live with us right here, next Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on the Tomorrow Be Televised. And the way we will do the interview is he will be with us for the full half hour. There will be no commercial interruption, no promos for upcoming guests as well. It will be just him, your phone calls, your chat room reaction, and yours truly. Norman Lear, next Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, our first half hour, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Gary, with the first episode, what kind of audience reaction has there been up to this? Have any of the people in the audience decided, hey, I'd like to support these charities, how do I get in touch with them?
On the first, I mean, we had great numbers, as I was mentioning earlier on the first episode. Blair was our advocate and champion there, highlighting a great organization in New York City around homelessness, and we couldn't have asked for better results as it relates to the outcome on the viewership. The impact of what the show has done for the organization, I haven't, to be honest with you, gotten that detail or that feedback yet. But overall response and text messages and emails that we all collectively have gotten have been very favorable. So that's very encouraging moving into into the season, into episode two.
Incidentally, if people want to donate or if they want to volunteer for these organizations, do they do it through Unite for Good? Do they contact the local NBC station? Do they contact NBC? What kind of communication vehicle is there for involvement by the public?
We have Unite for Good. We have Give for Good, which is G-I-V, the number 4, good, hashtag, Give for Good, which we're trying to build kind of a like-minded community so we can have continuous communication with people that really want to advocate for a concern or get involved with a concern. Unite for Good has definitely been our lead champion from a philanthropic organization. Mr. Melikoff, Anthony Melikoff, who's a dear friend, stepped up and was really, a champion in seeing this mission brought to television. And his organization has done great work and has contributed not only monies, but really trying to create a channel to get like-minded people to do social good and exercise acts of kindness, from millennials up to adults, and create a nice network. So, that's definitely a destination for people to visit. And like I said, hashtag give, G-I-V, the number 4, good, is also an aggregator in reference to keeping in contact with people that see the show being, a vehicle for them to expand their work.
Is NBC doing any outreach with their local stations, like Channel 4 here in New York, WNBC, in the case of, let's say, the first episode, which dealt with organizations based in their or our area? Is there any sort of work that they're doing to encourage, A, more people in their area to watch the show, specifically if it is a charity being highlighted in the area, or just to be involved in a general way?
Well, you know, to be honest with you, I just have to take my hat off because, more importantly, NBC gave us a platform, and Litton gave us a platform to put this out there. So, you know, in addition to any other digital outreach, advertising, promotional outreach that they're doing as an extension of the show, like I said, we really were under the gun to turn in these episodes. So a true strategy hasn't truly been implemented yet in reference to that kind of outreach, but just the fact that we're on television under their umbrella with their brand and Litton as well, couldn't ask for any more support. And I think that alone is going to really create a groundswell of activity.
Mm-hmm. Who's coming up in the second episode?
Who's coming up with it?
Right, who's coming up? What are the charities who's the celebrities going to be involved in the episode coming up tomorrow?
You know, in episode two, actually, I think Jenna Bush is our advocate for episode two. I'm not on the forefront of our episode model, but we've shot, I think, 14 episodes, and so we're kind of tailoring it to the overall, request of the network and what Bobby Freeman and Liz feel are most appropriate for episode two. So, to be honest with you, I think it's Jenna Bush's episode. Jenna Bush Hager was one of our hosts, and Celebrity Advocates will be in episode two.
I believe the second episode, from what I saw, I had a chance to check out NBC's website and also the website for More You Know, and I believe that the second episode tomorrow deals with two charities in Connecticut.
Definitely East Coast related. I know it's East Coast related. Yeah.
Hmm. By the way, is the effort to pair the type of subject matter? Let's say if you have two charities, like in the first episode, two charities that deal with the homeless, or two charities that deal with sanitation, two charities that deal with breast cancer, whatever. So is the effort to pair the charities up by subject matter?
Correct. Yeah, to keep the consistency. And also, you know, what that celebrity is advocating for, and also in a lot of cases what the foundation is supporting, who's the giver for that episode. We try to keep the sector consistent, and each episode is highlighting one particular sector instead of a variety of sectors.
And by the way, if you want to find out more about not just Give, but the entire schedule of More You Know, you can go to NBC.com. There's also a More You Know page on Facebook and on Twitter, as you heard just a few minutes ago. If you want to make a donation or get more details about whether the donation is money or volunteering your time or assisting, you can go to Twitter, #Give4Good. That's #Give4Good on Twitter. We've got Darren Reeves, one of the executive producers of Give. It's part of NBC's new Saturday morning block, The More You Know. It's a Lynn Entertainment, the people that also do Lynn's Weekend Adventure on ABC, One Magnificent Morning on the CW, and CBS's Epic Dream Team, all of which are back for new seasons this year. Gary joins us live from San Francisco here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. Delighted you're with us. If you've been with us all week long, we've had three wonderful shows, Monday, Tuesday, Friday. You can hear all of them at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. blogtalkradio.com/televised. You can also check out the podcast version on iTunes.com. And if you have Apple TV, go to the iTunes podcast app and listen to it or watch it anytime you like. That, by the way, is available not just from your Apple store, but if you don't have Apple TV, you can also order it online. It's 7,000 apps, a lot of great things you can do with it, including order pizzas and get them delivered from Papa John's, or order tickets on various sports entertainment events from StubHub, which did their Apple TV app, launched their app a couple of weeks ago. Gary, what are some of the subject matter and charities that we're going to see in upcoming episodes?
With our sectors, we tried to be very broad in reference to dealing with sectors that we felt from a community standpoint, people were sensitive to, but also that were very important concerns that, we can champion and get additional support for the organization. So we deal, with agriculture. We deal with STEM and technology. We do deal with kind of what I call emotional stability, which is basically kind of creating or incubating better outcomes for urban youth. In reference to providing them resources and opportunities, we have the homeless shelter. We have also a segment dealing with animal shelters and animal care. We have a sector on veterans as well. So we try to be, you know, broad reaching, but also realistic in reference to what are the concerns that are driving our community in reference to what they want to support.
And who are some of the notable celebrities that you have on coming up?
I think we have Kiki Palmer, we have Blair, we have Jenna. I think we have Tracy Morgan coming up as well. And then we're also in talks with some very interesting or high-profile personalities that have we're trying to coordinate schedules at this point. We have the great thing is we have a laundry list of celebrities that are kind of catching wave of what the show is about, which is always great. And then we also have corporations that are great. Some of the foundations, you know, we have Bloomberg, we have Paul Newman's nonprofit, the Ford Foundation, Ford Company Fund, a big contributor, Michael Eisner's foundation as well. So we also have some very credible foundations that are coming on board to participate as well. So it's a nice, you know, kind of intersection or repository of foundations, great charities that are doing great work, and then celebrities that are worthy of being celebrated because they're, you know, they have the humility to participate in the show.
How many episodes are you doing, and are all the episodes been done, or are you still going to be producing additional episodes for the season?
Yeah, I think we have about 10 to 12 more to deliver. We shot in New York or East Coast, Los Angeles. We'll be shooting some episodes in San Francisco, Northern California area. I believe we're also going to be in Chicago. You know, we're also kind of from a geographical landscape. We're trying to cover far-reaching organizations and sectors in the public community that are across the board from East Coast to West Coast. So that's always nice as well. On a very cost-effective budget that, like I said, Bungalow has been just fantastic in being efficient with the delivery on that.
And how much time does the notable spend in a given area with the two charities? Do they get the equal amount of time? Give me a sense of the process.
Yeah, each show probably is shot within a couple days, a day or two. We try to be, you know, respectful for the celebrities that are participating because they're participating really. You know, from out of the kindness of their heart, to be honest with you, I wouldn't say there's the payment for an episode is anything that would encourage someone to come and be a part of the show. So I would say, you know, hats off to all of our celebrity participants because they're really doing it from the core of their heart and soul. So, I would say about a month, a day and a half, 5 hours, 6 hours a day for the celebrity to engage, you know, with the nonprofits. Which is a good amount of time for them to kind of investigate, spend some quality time with both organizations. We do two organizations per episode, so that's a nice inspirational moment too for the organizations to have the celebrity around for a period of time to interface with their not only their staff but the people they serve.
I've had the opportunity to see Blair Underwood's career grow from LA Law on up, and it's got to be fantastic for him to sort of bring out this side of what he's all about through this series.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I always, I've been with Blair, I don't know, 20 years or so, and I constantly tell him that he is definitely one celebrity that deserves his celebrity. Not only his humility, his graciousness and how he deals with people in general, and definitely when we do work in the community, he's very authentic and spends makes eye contact with every person that he interfaces with. And, you know, it's not like, hey, well, you know, we've been here for 2 hours, I got to go. And he makes sure that everybody is walks away fulfilled in reference to what his, you know, what his commitment was. But more importantly, I think when you look at his, you know, his dossier of work and his longevity, his goodness, his soul, and what he is as a person is recycled back to his career. And so I'm not only thankful to be on a part of his team for 15, 20 years, but also, he's just one of those people that deserves his celebrity. And, you know, I don't haven't had a chance to spend a lot of time with Jenna, but, you know, those types of people, I mean, she stepped up and became a host out of being, you know, asked to do an episode. And, you know, so those are special people that I say deserve their celebrity, but in particular with Blair, couldn't find a greater person on the planet, to be honest with you.
The program is Give, and you can find it tomorrow at noon Eastern Pacific Time over the NBC Television Network as part of their new Saturday morning day part, The More You Know, put on by Lytton Entertainment. Check your local listings for the NBC station in your area, and remember, some NBC stations will run the program before or after noon, depending on other commitments. So please make sure when you find out about the station in your area, make sure you find out about when they run it. But most stations will play it at noon as part of the More You Know block. For more details online, go to www.nbc.com. That's www.nbc.com. You can also check the website of your local NBC station. You can also find The More You Know on Facebook and Twitter. And if you want to make a donation or you want to assist or volunteer with any of the charities, the organizations that are showcased on Give, here's where you go on Twitter. #give4good. #give4good. And what is Unite for Good's website?
UniteForGood.org, and remember the number four. Their work is definitely highly showcased online. And again, you know, big shout out to Anthony Melikoff, who, like I said, stepped up as a philanthropic foundation. So, you know, reference to donations and support, you know, to sustain a show like this, you know, I definitely say, you know, definitely if you have it in your heart to donate to Unite for Good. And again, for Chad, Warren, and Maria, much love to them. They're another one of our partners who stepped up and has been gracious with their network of resources, not only financially, but just as a marketing component to making the show successful. So, you know, we've had a lot of great champions, California Community Fund. I mean, just a lot of great people coming on board to make this successful and manifest to be a reality.
Gary, kudos to you, Blair, Jenna, Lytton, NBC, the NBC stations, everyone involved for doing this series. I hope it has a wonderful run, and I hope that more and more people not only get the chance to see the show starting tomorrow at noon, but also get involved with the show and, more importantly, the charities involved who deserve the incredible showcase you're giving them. Gary, thank you for being on. All the very best to you. Have a wonderful, wonderful run.
Thank you, and thank you again for supporting us, and you know, good luck to your endeavors as well.
Thank you so much, Gary. Appreciate it. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Gary Reeves, executive producer of Give, joining us live from San Francisco. I want to take a moment to thank all of our guests this week. It's been an incredible week, and I hope if you haven't had a chance to hear our shows this week, please do at blogtalkradio.com/televised. It's blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out the podcast at iTunes or on the Apple TV iTunes podcast app. Remember, next week we're on Tuesday and Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific. Coming up on Tuesday, the creative executive producer of Wolf Creek, Greg McLean, joining us live from Australia, Lynn Horton, the chief operating officer of Show TV, and from the new sci-fi series Channel Zero, its producer Nick Antosca. And next Friday, our lead guest, the one and only Norman Lear. If you have any questions, please email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants, not only those of Blog Talk Radio. Our production associate is Candace Williams. Andy Cho is Blog Talk Radio's general manager. The creator is Mr. Alan Levy. Tomorrow We Televise was brought to you by Audible.com and Amazon Company. But tomorrow We Televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a great weekend. We're back Tuesday, not Monday, Tuesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio. Until next time, stay well and stay tuned.